Hi, buddy. Welcome to Tuesday edition Bulldog Hour, and at this time of year, a little bit more. It's, you know, Sports Line, the Bulldog Hour, this time of year, a little bit more of Sports Line and a little bit less of the Bulldogs, though we will continue, naturally, to talk Fresno State every chance we get, including tomorrow when Daryl will be with us. Well, actually, Jackson will be with us tomorrow, so specifically about Fresno State, but on Thursday, Daryl will be along, and we will talk more about Deshaun and his chance with the Sixers, got a shot yesterday, and all of that, and what has become a basketball-dominant time of year. But today it's going to be a little bit different. Andrew is back from his trip overseas where he saw his beloved Yankees play a couple and win a couple in London. Those games are just now ending, if I'm not mistaken. That's how long it seemed to take. But we're going to talk about the All-Star game coming up tonight. One of the reasons, there's something else going on. That would be one of the reasons. The other reason is the game is on our air at 4 o'clock. CG will come up with 3, and then the pre at 4. Television-wise, it's on Fox. Good thing it's on Fox if you're someone trying to watch locally, and I will ask Andrew about this. Nexstar and DirecTV are still locked in a dispute. At least last I checked, they were as of last night. Now, maybe they got it rectified today. And both 24 and 47 are not available on DirecTV. That doesn't mean you can't get to them, but it means if you do not have any other entity, if you don't have Xfinity or what have you, you do need to make sure you've got some sort of antenna, either indoor or outdoor, that's a digital antenna, and it's pretty easy to pick up 24.1 or 47.1. But if they haven't gotten this thing solved right now, and like I said, as of last night they hadn't, then you're not going to be able to tune it in on DirecTV. But for tonight, you're okay, unless you want to watch Love Island. If your heart is set on watching Love Island, then you're going to have to make sure you got that outdoor antenna ready. If, however, you want to watch the All-Star game, you'll be okay on Fox 26 tonight and the radio feed on our air at, again, 4 o'clock. Home Run Derby last night. Very entertaining. I don't know what else Vlad Guerrero Jr. could do except hit more home runs than Pete Alonso in a final go-round. But it was a pretty entertaining 3 hours, and then they ruined it with the celebrity softball game afterward. Just kidding. J.R. Smith, without a shirt on, worse than what we saw in Game 1 against the Warriors 2 years ago in the NBA Finals. All right, our good friend Andrew Martin is ready. He is back. He has landed. The Yankees have finally finished the two-game series with the Red Sox, so we'll talk to Andrew about his time over in London and how they embraced baseball, particularly when Aaron Judge was walking down the street and people with Yankee hats had no idea who it was. Host of Bulldog Insider, of course, on 24, sports director 24 and 47, and the guy who's in negotiations right now with DirecTV to get this solved. Andrew, how you doing, my friend?
How's it going, Tony? You know, it's funny. I'm in another country. Actually, I was in three different countries. It was a lengthy vacation where, you know, I tell people all the time, summer's really the only time when sports people have the time to take vacation, because football season pretty much locks us up from August until December or January, or in my case, if I'm going to the Super Bowl, you know, early February, and then we've got, you know, February sweeps and May sweeps, and so the summer's really the only time to be able to get away. And I was fortunate to be, you know, able to take a trip both to celebrate my dad's birthday and to see the Yankees, you know, play in London. I mean, everyone knows that I'm a big Yankees fan. But I'm reading about everything that's happening back in Fresno while I'm in, you know, in Eastern Europe, because after London, we went to Germany and Poland. So I'm reading about Paul George and Kawhi Leonard and KD going to Brooklyn. I'm reading about the earthquakes, you know, in Ridgecrest. And then I'm hearing about this DirecTV and AT&T issue that unfortunately has knocked a pretty sizable chunk of our audience away from being able to view our product. And obviously there's nothing that we personally can do about it. We just have to hope that it gets resolved pretty quickly. But I'm pretty much all caught up on everything that's happened so far over the last couple of weeks.
Well, look, first of all, good news, bad news. The bad news is it is not easily accessible for those with DirecTV because it's off air, but at least, as I mentioned before you came up, you can get to 24.1 or 47.1 with the proper digital antenna. Just the right indoor antenna will do it for you in most places around the valley, as opposed to what has happened with DirecTV and the Pac-12 network and the L.A. Dodgers and Spectrum Sportsnet, where the impasse has gone on now for 4 years and they haven't gotten it rectified yet. I think you guys will get it fixed. I'm fairly confident about that. And I wasn't kidding about Love Island. If you want to watch Love Island, you're going to have to be very, very careful. I know Poppy Levitard just sounded very excited about Love Island. All right, Ange, I want to ask you here, because we are going to go over baseball today. I will tell you this, and I've mentioned this probably every year, the last 11 years you've been on air with me. If ever the WNBA were to wise up and arrange to have their title game at some point this week, they would be so much better off, particularly, say, Thursday, okay, because you wouldn't want to get in the way of that juggernaut that is the ESPYs tomorrow. But a Thursday title game would make so much sense for the WNBA, because then they would have all eyeballs on the league. Otherwise, I've said enough about the WNBA over the years to suffice. Now, that having been said, let's start. You know what? Here we go again. It's email time, because they keep saying that I don't respect the WNBA, and I keep saying it gets better and better every year. But the difference, why do I do this to myself? The difference, Andrew, between college basketball, the women's game, and the WNBA is you always have a greater allegiance to your college. Same applies with the NBA, but for the NBA, there's a pure athleticism involved. For the WNBA, they're improving, but it is not an above-the-rim game, so it lacks what the college game has, which is the attachment emotionally to a team. That having been said, I wish the league well. Someday they can stand on their own, and they're not propped up by the NBA. Would you like to comment at all, Andrew, or are you going to leave me out on Love Island or Loveless Island all by myself? I'm just curious.
Well, I'll throw you a little bit of rope when I say this.
Or a boat anchor. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, I need a life preserver. Here comes the rusty boat anchor. Go ahead.
Yeah, I am all for equality, and obviously the issue of equal pay has come up with the U.S. women's national soccer team.
Yeah, that's a different issue. I'm not talking about that, but sure, go ahead.
Right, but to tie everything in together, on PTI yesterday, Tony Kornheiser and Michael Wilbon were debating the issue of not the fact that the women deserve equal pay as the men, but how you can justify that pay with the ratings. And Tony Kornheiser's argument was the U.S. Women's soccer players should be paid more than the men's soccer players because the rating of that championship game, the World Cup final against against the Netherlands on Sunday, drew, I think, a 10 rating, which, you know, blows plenty of mainstream sports out of the water. Now, people are not necessarily watching the national, women's soccer league games, but when everybody's coming together and playing for their country, playing for a prize, playing for a world championship, you know, you really should compensate the players on the scale of what they accomplished. And the men's players make more money, but they're not nearly as good as the women's players, at least not in the U.S. That's been the case for several years. But then Michael Wilbon came back with the argument of, well, but look at the ratings overall, and just look at how much money is brought in from advertisers and for sports and all that stuff, and it gets pretty convoluted and everything. The one thing that I'll say about the WNBA is, I am all for equality. I think that, there are incredibly talented players out there who deserve an opportunity to play professionally in their chosen field. But if the advertisers are not there, if the ratings are not there, it really is tough to, it really is tough to balance everything. And so I understand the predicament that everybody is in. And nobody wants to take away opportunities, but we understand that money makes the world go round, and the money is not always there. So That's what I'll say to try and help you out a little bit while keeping myself above water.
First of all, the reason I bring this up, and goodness knows, masochism is one of the reasons I bring this up, obviously, because it results in the same thing every year. Look, I love the women's game collegiately, always have. I one of the original guys that paid to put the women's games on the Dana Wilkersons and the people, the Cindy Browns and the people at Long Beach State in conference. It was terrific. It still is a great game collegiately. My issue is, and you just touched upon it, you have had the league on for, in play for a long time, and it's been supported by the NBA. And it's the product has improved, but the depth of talent is not yet there. It's an evolutionary, not a revolutionary process. I get it. But it also is undeniable that the numbers haven't been there the way they had hoped. They're getting better. But, you know, Andrew, it's counter-programming. You'd like to get to a point that it's not merely counter-programming. It is there because you think it is the best thing on. And what I'm saying is it's played over the summer, and they really need to pick their spots if they can. And this week is one of them where it's regular season for them, and I realize why, because they're just getting things started. I think it's a great time to draw the attention to the product. And I think in another 20 years or so, you may very well see the evolutionary process bring it to the level. I will say this about equal pay. I think what the players in the WNBA have every right to ask is for the same percentage of profit that the NBA players get. Then it comes down to, do you generate that kind of revenue? If you do, you're entitled to it. If you don't generate it, then it's kind of hard to dole it out. But you know what? That's just me, and that's enough of that. Okay. Look, before we get to baseball, since our good buddy Greg emailed in, has nothing to do with the WNBA, though he's probably laughing his butt off right now down in Tulare watching me squirm through this, a problem of my own making once again. I want to address this before we get to baseball, because that'll be the rest of the day for you and I. Greg mentioned, he said, you were talking yesterday about LeBron's injury this past year, ignoring that George had a shoulder separation. Actually, you know, both shoulders were addressed, and that Leonard had his mystery injury that kept him in San Antonio that one year that, you know, kept him out of play and ultimately led to him going to Toronto. And he said, Anthony Davis has had his Knicks also, so none of these big names are immune from injury. Hey, Greg, as a Warrior fan, I'm well aware of big names with injury. He said that he didn't like the way George weaseled his way out of OKC. He thought it was weak because he talked about the fact that Paul re-upped that big deal a year ago, and they had the big celebration and all of that stuff. And he said that it was far worse, his bad form, than Durant's if you can't beat him, join him routine with the Warriors. He just said, Greg did, he hates to be contrarian again, but he finds it hard to get excited about a possible Clipper preseason game in Fresno. We brought it up yesterday. He said, who's to say how much or how little if either Leonard or George would even play? Okay. Andrew, I will ask you, because Greg ended by saying, now excuse me while I chase those damn kids off my lawn. Exactly, Greg. You tell them you just reseeded. You kids get off of my lawn. You know, Andrew, we had a guy that was so angry about us walking across his lawn as a kid, as when we were kids, that he put a chain link fence right across his corner lot, thereby ruining the aesthetic of his lawn, trying to keep us out of there. That's a little bit radical, don't you think? Okay, let me ask about this. How do you feel about, first of all, what Paul George did? First time you and I have talked about it on air. I mean, basically, you know what happened. You had Kawhi Leonard saying, you know what, I'd love to have Kevin Durant here, but Durant didn't want to come here. He was headed to Brooklyn. So he said, let's see if Paul wants to get there. He contacted Paul. Paul brought his agent up to Sam Presti and said, hey, you know what, I want out. I want to go back home. How do you feel about that, number one, since he did sign the multi-year deal, the four-year deal last year?
Well, if he truly wanted to be in Los Angeles, then there's no reason why he wouldn't have taken a meeting with the Lakers and or the Clippers before he agreed to re-sign with Oklahoma City. And so it comes down to me to be a matter of loyalty. And you know, nothing against, you know, Kawhi Leonard, but there's an issue of loyalty with Kawhi Leonard as well. I mean, you know, behind closed doors, he's trying to recruit, you know, other players to go to Los Angeles with him when he just won a championship in Toronto. Now, he's a free agent, so he can do what he wants. Paul George was not a free agent, and like you said, he had just agreed to re-sign in Oklahoma City. You know, he went to Russell Westbrook's party on the night that he announced it, and he was he was talking publicly about wanting to build something and wanting to play with Westbrook and all this, and then he demands a trade because Kawhi Leonard calls and says, hey, I want you to come to Los Angeles. Now, we know that Paul George grew up in Palmdale, and we know that, you know, he was a big Kobe Bryant fan and a fan of the Clippers, so if he now has an opportunity to play for the team that he grew up rooting for, more power to him. He obviously has a lot of clout as an all-star, you know, perennial all-star in the NBA. But again, to me, it comes down to loyalty, Tony. And if he wanted to be in Los Angeles, why did he not go to Los Angeles before he re-signed with Oklahoma City? And if the answer was to play with Kawhi Leonard or another superstar, he has a superstar with him in Oklahoma City. So my guess is something must have happened between, you know, the Raptors, you know, ending the season with a championship and Kawhi Leonard being talked about as, you know, one of the top two or three players in the NBA, or Paul George had some type of falling out with Russell Westbrook and he needed to get out of a toxic situation. But either way, the optics don't look good for a player who was committed to Oklahoma City as recently as a year ago.
Fair enough. Also, Greg, all kidding aside, one of the things we've heard is that Paul George got wind that Russell Westbrook was trying to get out of OKC, that after, again, the ouster start of the playoffs to Portland, that Russell felt it was time to go. Now, I don't know if it's true or not, but if that's the case, then I can see when the phone rang and it was Kawhi Leonard to Paul George, hey, you want to go home? Because I'm heading home, but I need, you know, another big star with me to make sure we can carry the day. We all know what was going on across the hall with the Lakers, because already AD was there for LeBron. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. Whether the front office, who got more than a lion's share of draft picks from this deal, whether Sam Presti in the front office at OKC felt they had hit a ceiling, I don't know. Only they know that. I do know it was very strange to have Paul go to management in OKC and basically say, in so many words, you're not going to have a choice. Either you make a trade with me back to L.A., or I'm going to be unhappy staying here. So somewhere in there, somewhere in that ocean, there's an eyedropper of truth, okay? And where it is, I don't know. But beyond that, what about what we had brought up yesterday? I was talking to Paul about it, about a Clipper preseason game here. Now, Greg is right, Andrew. A preseason game, you're not going to see much on court of Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, although I would think that you would see an effort made for both of them to be here and to make an appearance. Would that bring us 15,000 in the Save Mart Center if those two were there, suited up, prepared to play a little bit? Or is that overstated?
I think 15,000 might be a little bit of a stretch, but I could definitely see, you know, five digits. I think that there could be, you know, maybe 12,000, you know, possibly more than that, because you're talking about two of the best players in the NBA, two players who have, you know, whack ties, and one player in particular that, you know, is beloved in Fresno State history. And it's so funny with Paul George, we've talked about it numerous times, about how when he did suit up for the Bulldogs for those two seasons, he was a good player, but he was not nearly the superstar that he blossomed into the NBA. And then you and I talked after he had that horrific injury a few summers ago when he was competing for Team USA. We didn't know if he would recover fully, and he obviously has proven those doubters wrong. So if you get Paul George, who is an adopted son of Fresno, and Kawhi Leonard, who has a relationship with Justin Hudson, at the Save Mart Center at the same time, you know, with Kawhi Leonard having just, you know, been crowned an NBA champion, I think you'll see a very significant crowd to want to come out and support those two. But you also have a lot of Clippers fans, here in the Valley. So I could see a really good crowd coming. It's tough to predict if 15,000 would show up for a preseason game that, you know, obviously doesn't count in the standings, not to mention the fact that, like you said, if both those players do make an appearance, realistically, how many minutes would they play, if they play at all? So it's tough to assume that 15,000 people would show up for maybe 3 or 4 minutes of those guys on the floor, but I think that you would get a significant crowd, and I think it's something that could be, you know, easily promotable and possibly, could possibly lead to bigger and better down the road in marketing opportunities. And I think I speak for everyone when I say that we in Fresno would love to see that type of an exhibition.
Well, I hope it does happen, because I know for Justin Hudson it would be terrific to have two guys with ties. Obviously, Leonard, the tie is the fact that Hud, as we've talked over and over again, and you're well aware of it, recruited him for San Diego State. Naturally, with Paul George, Paul is here frequently. We know this, that if there are autograph opportunities and Q&As or whatever, and I know that Paul would be more than willing. I don't know whether Kawhi's reticence would play in. It would be an event, and I would hope that it would happen. What it means in the long term, I don't know. I am curious, though, Andrew, to see what happens in regard to what has become, understandably so, from a generational standpoint, a Laker market. You know, I was mentioning yesterday that, speaking of DirecTV, if you have the DirecTV package, you don't really need, if you're a California sports fan, meaning you follow the teams here in the NBA mainly, you don't need the league pass. You don't need to spend $250 because of where we are geographically. We get the Laker games, the Clipper games, naturally the Warrior games, and the Kings games. We're the only part of the state that gets all four teams as part of that package of basic stuff. Everybody else, you're blacked out. You know, in San Francisco, they can't even get the Kings games. They just get the Warriors. So it's a great melting pot for fan bases, and I'm waiting to see, since the Warrior five-year run is at least temporarily derailed, the Lakers are going to be really good no matter what happens with adding somebody else, because as long as LeBron and AD are there, and they've got some bench help now, a lot of it from the Warriors, Cousins, Cook, etc., might even be Iguodala coming that way, we'll see. They're going to be a title contender. Naturally, the Clippers have put themselves there, and the Kings are much improving. I'll ask you, Andrew, where are we at right now in this market? Is this still a Laker market? The Warriors eroded it greatly over the last 5 years, because it hadn't been a Warrior market since the mid-70s. Now, where are we at as far as the hierarchy? What's your guess, fan base-wise?
Right. Well, when I moved to Fresno in 2008, it was definitely a Lakers community.
Well, there's no
question.
And
obviously the paradigm... Right. Well, the paradigm shifted, you know, right when the Warriors were making their run. And, you know, let's face it, we all know why the concept of bandwagon fans exist. And there were plenty of people that came out of the woodwork when the Warriors were starting their run, you know, to titles. And even before they got Kevin Durant, they were incredibly good and incredibly talented. And, you know, Steve Kerr certainly is the one that started tipping that balance, because people talk about, you know, Mark Jackson and setting the foundation, but this team was not really on the radar with the, you know, the Splash Brothers name and really taken off until Steve Kerr, you know, took over, you know, took over the reins. So for me, it went from a Lakers community to a Warriors community. Now, there are still pockets of fans in there. I mean, George Takata is the biggest Sacramento Kings fan that I know. But I don't know many Sacramento Kings fans. I know there are some fans in this area, but I equate that to, you know, kind of like in baseball, you know, this valley is pretty much split between, you know, Giants and Dodgers. There are pockets of A's fans, and, you know, both Scott Bemis and Julia Lopez, for example, both happen to be Angels fans. I know Mike Batesel is a huge Angels fan, but most people who are baseball fans
Hold
in this valley...
Here. Hold on. Mike Batesel grew up where he knew whether the Angels won or lost by looking out his bedroom window, because he could see the big A lit up, which I told him didn't happen frequently enough. Mike and I still have an issue about 2002 we haven't resolved yet, Andrew, but go right ahead, okay?
Yeah, well, you can blame Dusty Baker for that.
Well, yes, you can. You can blame Dusty Baker. You can blame Felix Rodriguez for deciding that he's going to throw every damn fastball in the same place. Okay, you know what? I better stop myself before the FCC stops me. So go right ahead. Boy, you really picked a sore subject with that. Okay.
All I was saying, Tony, is that we live in a unique area in that the Central Valley is centrally located in the state, so you've got pockets of fans of all the major sports teams located right here in the Valley. But when it comes to the NBA, what I discovered when I first moved here 11 years ago in 2008 is when it comes to the NBA, this is a Lakers community, and Kobe Bryant was still on the Lakers, and, you know, the memory of the Showtime Lakers was, you know, not quite fading yet, but, you know, that's what people wanted to hold on to when they were talking about, you know, NBA you know, loyalty here in the Valley. But then when the Warriors started to be successful, then you saw, you know, kind of that, as I mentioned, the paradigm shifted a little bit to Warriors fans. I still think the Warriors fans aren't going anywhere because, let's face it, the team may not be, you know, the favorite to possibly even make the playoffs next year with so many changes. And, you know, when Klay Thompson comes back, who knows if he'll be ready to go, you know, at 100% in January and February, and not having Iguodala, not having you know, even Sean Livingston, you know, pieces of the puzzle, not to mention the superstars like Kevin Durant and DeMarcus Cousins, et cetera, that the Warriors are still going to be a good team. And as has been said on numerous national programs, Stephen A. Smith said, you basically just, you know, take a redshirt year this year before the dynasty will continue. Maybe or not that that's the case, but I do think that the Lakers fans will take over this next year, specifically here in the Valley, because of the LeBron and AD dynamic, Anthony Davis dynamic. Having said that, I do think that there will be some Clippers fans, some more Clippers fans that we see because it's a team that shares, obviously, that building with the Lakers. But there are a lot of, you know, Paul George fans in this Valley, and Kawhi yep. Leonard is a, you know, native son of California. So I would put it as, if the Lakers, you know, live up to what we expect that duo to be, then I think the Lakers fans, at least for this next year, will probably overtake the Warriors fans. And there is a chance that Clippers fans can overtake the Warriors fans, at least temporarily, until Golden State gets back on its feet as best it can with the loss of all these superstars. But it's going to be really interesting to see where, where the fan bases, are coming from. Because as was pointed out by a few people over the last couple of weeks, a few years ago we were talking about all these threesomes, you know, all these trios, all these superstar trios in the NBA. Back, you know, when Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Russell Westbrook were on Oklahoma City, and back when, you know, the Boston Celtics had their big three, and obviously when LeBron was on the Heat and they had the big three with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. So you went from having big threes on all these teams to now having duos across the NBA. It's going to make for a really interesting season next year. And, you know, to be honest, I don't know who the best team is in the East. It might be Milwaukee, because obviously Giannis Antetokounmpo is the reigning MVP, and you could pair him with Chris Middleton. And, you know, Brooke Lopez just signed a huge deal, and now Robin Lopez is on that team. So there's a fresh no reason to root for the Milwaukee Bucks. They're probably they're probably going to be the best team in the East with, the Raptors kind of having disbanded. But in the West, there are probably a good five or six teams that might have a legitimate chance to compete. So it'll be a really interesting season in the NBA next year.
Yeah, you're right about that, Andrew. I'm going to talk more about it, obviously, with Daryl on Thursday. But I did want to address Greg's email because his points are well taken. And I will tell you this, and Jonathan emailed in and mentioned, you know, it's still a Lakers market. The Warrior fan base has grown over the past few years, but it hasn't eclipsed the amount of Laker fans here. Jonathan, current day, you're right about that. And one of the things, Andrew, and I'm old enough, of course, unfortunately, I'm old enough to be well aware of it because I lived through it. The Lakers were always good. I mean, throughout the 60s when I was a kid, the Lakers were chasing titles. They couldn't quite get over the hump, but they were always right there. The Warriors were not a bad team by any means. They were in a couple of NBA finals, but they didn't win them. But, and I've mentioned this to you before, and it's sort of amazing to think about now. When the Warriors won the title in 1975, at that point, Andrew, incredibly, the Lakers and Warriors, though the Lakers' history from Minneapolis through L.A. was really sprinkled with much more success year to year, the titles, the West Coast, dead even at 1-1. So in 1975, when the Warriors won, the Warriors came back the next year. They were the best team in basketball record-wise. So at that point, it was 1-1. The Lakers were really in trouble, and the Warriors were the best team. And if you would have told me at that point what we were going to see unfold is what has taken place, or what did take place, which is the Warriors sat there idle for 40 years. There was the brief moment with Purvis Short or with Run TMC or We Believe or whatever. But fundamentally, over 40 years, the Lakers started putting up titles. The Warriors did not. And so even though the Warriors came back to the forefront for the first time in 40 years back in 2015, the bottom line is, Jonathan is right, this has become a Laker market, and it's probably going to remain that way, though the Warriors have great representation. The question is, where will the Clippers fit in when you have somebody as popular as Paul George, and you have he and Kawhi Leonard both underdogs in that they came from the state university system, neither were highly recruited. If the Clippers put titles up, and only if the Clippers put NBA titles up, will you see any kind of shift in that direction. It's going to be a great year to just watch basketball, period, as a fan. And I'll tell you this, Andrew, as a Warrior fan, they're saying the Warriors need a break after five straight trips to the finals. as a Warrior fan, I need a break because it got to the point, it kind of reminded me of the 49ers toward the tail end of their dynasty. I couldn't enjoy a 49er game because the expectation was such that they were supposed to win. So it would be, they'd kick a field goal in the middle of the first quarter, and they're up 3-0 with 8 minutes to go in the first quarter. I would say, is this game over yet? In other words, I couldn't enjoy the game because the expectation was you're supposed to win, and if you lose, it was a catastrophe. It got that way with the Warriors. Anytime they lost, it was, what in hell is going on? So I'll be glad to take a breath. Okay, Chris just emailed in, loving all this baseball talk. Chris, I love you up in Seattle. Bleep you. Okay, now, Andrew, let's talk baseball right now. Are you looking forward to the All-Star game tonight, first of all? I mean, as a Yankee fan, I know you don't want anybody to get hurt, but are you looking forward to this tonight?
To be honest.
Acuna Jr. hitting ninth in Dave Roberts' lineup. How about that?
You know, to be honest, Tony, I'm not. I'm really not. And I love baseball. But personally, I feel like the All-Star game has just there isn't much. And I don't want to say anything bad about the players in the game because everybody there is deserving of being there. And they've all had really good seasons. But I just don't feel like from a national perspective, that there really is enough star power in this game. And am I crazy for thinking that aside from, you know, you mentioned, you know, Ronald Acuna Jr. batting ninth, you know, I mean, you've got Bellinger, you've got Yelich, obviously Mike Trout on the American League side. But how many casual baseball fans know about Marte or Wilson Contreras, or some of the bench players, you know, who are having good seasons, but are not household names? And, you know, for me, if we don't have any local players from this area in the game, and Aaron Judge is not in it this year because, I mean, let's face it, he's having a good season, but he missed, you know, 50-something, you know, games with that injury. So Judge is not in it. Steven Vogt was in it, you know, a couple of times several years ago. We don't have, we don't have Aaron Hill, you know, in the game. Doug Fister's retired. You know, I mean, Justin Wilson has been injured, and he's not quite at the All-Star level. So from a local perspective, there's really no specific reason to tune in and watch. But I just find that I guess I just feel like there's not as much star power this year as there has been in years past. And, you know, also the thing with an All-Star game is the managers are forced to keep a couple of players, hold them back because you're going to need pitchers, and you don't want to be embarrassed by having a tie like we had several years ago that led to the whole game counting for something. But you also want to give these players an opportunity, you know, to get in the game and play. But most players are only going to get two at bats and then leave. And I understand the concept of the All-Star game. I feel like this year is different because in my mind, at least, there isn't much like big name recognition across Major League Baseball. So, I'm curious to see how it plays out, and I love baseball, so I'll be paying attention, of course. But I feel like it's not as if, and I brought this up numerous times too, when Bobby Jones, made his one All-Star game back in, 2002, you know, he faced Mark McGwire and Ken Griffey Jr., in the inning that he pitched. That's a lot of star power. You know, when you've got guys like those two sluggers, or, you know, Barry Bonds or Derek Jeter in the game every single year, these are people who, you know, were the face of baseball and everybody knew who they were. I just feel like there are more guys who are kind of in under the radar this year. Not that they're not deserving of being All-Stars, but they're not guys right. That like the casual fan would know. And so for that reason, I'm not as excited this year as I have been in years past.
Fair enough. I want to take a break. I want to bring Andrew up to the top of the hour. We'll talk more about this. Chris, I love you, and you're right. I started talking baseball, and if you want to blame somebody, Chris, blame Greg and Tulare. Stop by and see Greg the next time you come back down into Cali and tell Greg, how dare you send a compelling email to mess up where we're headed? All right, let's take a break. Come back with more on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN. Hi, buddy. Welcome back. 242 here until 3 o'clock. CG will take over, bring you to 4, and it is All-Star game time for us on ESPN Radio at 4. first pitch, 5:20 or so from the old Jake, which is now Progressive and has been Progressive Field for a good long while in beautiful and long-suffering baseball-wise Cleveland, Ohio, where they're still waiting, and they have been waiting since, what, 1948, I guess, for the Indians to cash in, and we'll see if maybe this is the year. But anyway, we look forward to it. Talking with our good friend Andrew Martin, Channel 24, Channel 47. Andrew, you were talking about the local angle of this game tonight. You know, I was thinking about Tom Seaver's appearance in 67. You know, Tom had just gotten out of SC, and, you know, he was not yet Tom Terrific. It was 2 years after that that the Yankees won the World Series. But the Mets won the World Series. See, I'm talking to you, and I'm giving the Yankees the title. Okay. I think Frank Robinson would have been happy if it would have been the Yankees, because it would have meant that he wouldn't have lost with the Orioles. But I was just looking, Andrew, at the, you know, because Seaver got the save in that very long game in Anaheim that was won, what, the 15th inning by the Tony Perez homer, 1-0. But when you look, you talk about star power, when you look at the guys that were on the roster, Ernie Banks, Joe Torre, Orlando Cepeda, Dick Allen, Tony Perez, Hank Aaron, Roberto Clemente, Willie Mays, Pete Rose. It was a different time and place. If there was more a concentration of the great, great players. The American League had the same kind of thing going. Have you seen in your generation a watering down of the talent, or is it that interleague play has taken some of the majesty away from these types of matchups?
That's a really good question. I wouldn't say watering down of talent, because you still have to be the best of the best to make a 25-man roster. I just think that, you know, we're not seeing transcendent players as much recently as, you know, obviously in other generations. And, you know, there definitely are a few players out there. I mean, I've said this before, I'll say it again. I think that had Ken Griffey Jr. never gotten hurt, that he would have gone down as the best player in Major League history, a true five-tool guy. But I think Mike Trout, if he continues on the path that he's on, will go down as the greatest player in Major League Baseball history. I mean, he's having an even better season this year than he has in any of his other seasons, which is unfathomable considering on, you know, how good of a player he's been since he first broke into the bigs. And he's a guy who is worth the massive contract that he just recently signed, $430 million or whatever it is. But how many players, seriously, Tony, how many players on current Major League rosters are surefire first ballot Hall of Famers? I don't know how many there are, you know, and I don't know when we're going to see another 300-win pitcher. I mean, we don't even see 20-win seasons anymore. The game is completely different. You know, it's so specialized, especially when it comes to pitchers. It's all about analytics now. I mean, the line drive is pretty much gone, you know, gone by the wayside. It's basically hit a home run or strike out, and the strikeouts aren't right. Even as egregious anymore. I mean, people just want to see the long ball, and that's why Justin Verlander came out with his whole the baseballs are juiced comment, and who knows if steroids are still rampant in the game. I mean, it's a different time right now. So I wouldn't say that it's watered down, because – you know, you still have incredibly talented players. Even the role players are very talented. I just think, though, that overall it's more balanced, and you don't have as many top-heavy talented players as we've had in the past. And so, again, I would say, you know, of all the players that are on, you know, active Major League rosters, we're probably going to see by the time their careers are done maybe – 10 to 15 guys right now, I would say, are surefire first ballot Hall of Famers. You know, there are other players who could kind of play themselves into that category, but right now I don't see guys, you know, who are as, you know, going to be as memorable, you know, decades and generations from now. I mean, people still know who Mickey Mantle is. People still know, you know, who Babe Ruth is, who Willie Mays is. You mentioned all those guys, Roberto Clemente, et cetera. You know, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, are people going to remember Christian Yelich? You know, he's had a good run. He's had a good couple of seasons. But is he a generational talent? I don't know the answer to that question right now. I think Mike Trout certainly is. And I definitely think, you know, that even like C.C. Sabathia, for example, is going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. But he even hasn't been the same player that he was, you know, 5-6 years ago. So it really is tough to tell, but I kind of think that it's just a sign of the times.
Well, I'll tell you what, and this is a topic for another time where we have more time, but there are two things. One, anybody has a chance, that is a little bit younger, go to Wikipedia and just enter in 1971 All-Star Game and check the lineups on. That was the game at Tiger Stadium that Reggie Jackson almost hit it out of the place, hit the transformer. But just check the lineups for the two teams, and you'll understand what star power was all about. And the other thing that we'll get to at some other point, because I want to ask you about the reaction you saw in London by those fans. But, Andrew, you know, we talked about Joe Garagiola a long time ago saying one of the reasons there was closeness between fans and players is they all traveled on the subway together to games in New York. They all lived in the same neighborhood. Now we have seen salaries, and I'm not bemoaning them in any professional sport. You get what you can get. But we've seen salaries to explode to the level that when LeBron makes the comment, which he did, that we've talked about in basketball, it's applicable across the board for the professional athlete, the star athlete. You go back to your life, I go back to mine. And I wonder sometimes about the tremendous distance, that chasm between a fan base that might have to save up because it costs $500 to take a family of four with, you know, parking and tickets and souvenirs and, you know, churros to play, to watch guys play who are making more money in a month that you can make in, than you can make in your lifetime, and that there has to be an effect, a cause and effect somewhere there. We'll get to it at some other point. But in the last 3 minutes, I wanted to ask you, because you and I talked off-air about Aaron Judge and walking along in the streets of London, he sees two fans with Yankee hats. They don't recognize Aaron Judge. It probably means they just picked up Yankee hats at a souvenir store. But was the attempt over two games, which took a long, it was almost like cricket as long as those games took, did it make inroads about England and Europe and its desire to see regular season baseball, in your opinion?
No, I don't think so, to be honest. And I know that Major League Baseball tried to make it as Americanized as possible, singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game, having, you know, peanuts and Cracker Jack available to fans in the stands. You know, I mean, they sang the national anthem. They had the British national anthem. They had a mascot race, which was, you know, completely London-based. The four participants were Winston Churchill, King Henry VIII, Freddie Mercury, and the Loch Ness Monster, which I thought was pretty cool. But having said that, the people that I was talking with, and even just the fans in the stands, it seemed like the bulk of the fans were Americans, either people like, you know, myself and my family who flew right over to London to check out the game, or Americans that were living in Europe. And so, I mean, the crowds were great for the two games, but at the same time, by the time the games ended, it was pretty thin out there. And as we know, Yankees-Red Sox games, I mean, both of those games went over 4.5 hours. Sometimes games will go over 5 hours between those two teams. And the stigma with baseball is that it's boring. I mean, a cricket, you know, game can be considered boring to Europeans. To go to an American baseball game and to sit there for 4.5 hours, unless you're in love with either one of those teams or the sport, it's kind of tough to assume. So I think Major League Baseball did the best that it could under the circumstances, but I don't know if you know, if the game was really embraced by the fans of you know, of typical England soccer, you know, football programs, wow, the types of sporting events that people in that part of the world attend. But as a Yankees fan, I was, you know, obviously thrilled to see them in a new venue, and obviously winning two games against the Red Sox is great no matter what city or stadium they're playing in. But I don't think the fans there truly embraced what Major League Baseball was trying to do. But next year the Cubs and Cardinals are going over there. Maybe, you know, having already gone through this process, the executives at, you know, at MLB headquarters will tweak things to make it a little bit more endearing.
Right. Last thing for you. I always appreciate the time, my friend. I do want to mention that this Sunday coming up at 6 o'clock on the inside, our good friend Mike Stovall scheduled to be with you. So going to be great reminiscence about 2001 Bulldogs, about the QBC, everything coming up. Andrew, that ought to be a great conversation with a terrific guy who's a good friend, and he's been great to us on air, and I'm so glad you're going to have him on.
Yes, happy to do it. He and I talked briefly on the phone yesterday. Obviously, he's been a guest with you for a while. You know, I've never met Mike personally, but I, you know, I certainly know of his exploits, and I've heard him on with you, so I know he's very eloquent. Looking forward to having a conversation with him and seeing where he is in regards to the QBC club and that bus trip that's being planned for the USC game on the 31st. So we'll have a nice conversation. And unfortunately, if you're a DirecTV or AT&T subscriber, you got to go find someone who's got Comcast.
No, it'll be fixed. Wait a minute. I guarantee you it will be resolved before Sunday. I guarantee it, Andrew.
I know.
It's not going to last any longer. Cooler heads will prevail. This will not be Spectrum Sports, that of the Dodgers or the Pac-12 Network. Trust me. Andrew, appreciate it. I'm glad you're back. And I know Europe will never be the same once you and your dad were there. But I'm glad you survived it and vice versa. You and I will talk down the road. Take care, my friend.
Sounds good, Tony. Good to be back in the U.S.
You got it. All right, guys. A good friend, Andrew Martin. We will take a break, come back, and wrap things up on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN.